Last month, the Texas Board of Education approved changes that would require, among other things, that high school social studies textbooks, quote, describe the conservative resurgence of the 1980s and 1990s, including Phyllis Schlafly, The Contract with America, the Heritage Foundation, the Moral Majority, and the National Rifle Association. The move stirred up controversy beyond the borders of the Lone Star State because, as one of the largest buyers of textbooks, Texas influences curricula at schools nationwide. But it wasn't the first time that a local struggle over what students should be taught made national headlines. In 1974, a textbook controversy in Charleston, West Virginia, became one of the first battles of what we've come to call the culture wars. Trey Kay, who grew up in Charleston, has produced an audio documentary about the 1974 controversy called The Great Textbook War. It has won a Peabody, and it'll air this weekend on WNYC AM 820. I'm very pleased that it brings Trey Kay back to our show today, huh?
Thank you, Leonard.
How much of a personal connection do you have to this story? Do you have memories of the 1974 controversy?
I was a seventh grader going to school when this was all happening. I was riding a school bus to John Adams Junior High School, and as we were going past the gate, there was a group of kind of working class women there with protest signs, and the signs said something like, you know, get the devil books out of the school, get the dirty textbooks out of the schools. And I kept thinking to myself, what's up with these dirty books? Are we going to be reading Playboy or Penthouse in school? And that was really my first inkling of this, and there was a lot that ensued thereafter.
And was everybody aware of the fact that this became a national story
in West Virginia? Sure. I mean, the national news poured in. As a matter of fact, some of the it became a turbulent thing, as we'll probably talk about. But I don't know, there was a newsman from Jeb Duval from CBS who actually got beaten up by several of the protesters up in a rural community called Campbell's Creek. So yes, everybody
was beaten up for what? For just telling the story?
He was there to he was there just kind of filming a rally that was happening, and I actually interviewed some people about this. Some of the protesters came up to him and told him to turn his camera off, and he didn't, and they roughed him and his crew up. And what I was told, and I'm not sure that I can verify this, but I was told that they actually stole his camera, and I heard that he never got it back.
When you started working on this documentary, had you already heard about the controversy that was brewing in Texas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's something that I've kind of known, mostly because as I was working on this documentary, preparing for it, I knew that in the beginning of the textbook controversy, there were Mel and Norma Gabler. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they were Texas watchdogs. They were kind of like a mom and pop who were trying to do their own textbook reviews, and they did it out of their homes. And these reviews they did were incredibly influential on the adoptions in textbooks. And now they're gone, but their organization still lives on.
Do you think that they were inspired by what happened in Charleston? Was this the first time something like this had happened about textbooks?
That's a question that a lot of people ask me. And from what I know, it's not the first textbook controversy. It clearly was the most violent. That for sure. And just to answer your first part of that question, was the Gablers did come to Kanawha County to kind of lend some of their expertise with regard to what they knew about textbooks. I think that the people in Kanawha County, a lot of them were just kind of ignorant to this. The people who would have objected to this, and the Gablers kind of came along and I'm not saying that they were a big influence, but they did come and lead some talks and sessions and were at rallies with regard to the textbooks.
Well, why was the Kanawha County School Board discussing new textbooks in 1974?
Well, I mean, you think about it. This is 1974. We're only 6 years after the Kennedy and King assassinations. We're not very long past the civil rights, the Great Society changes that happened in 65. In 1965, there was the—I'm going to get this wrong—but the education—I'm blanking on the title—but there was an act of Congress that was a big policy or curriculum change to change the education policy in the country, so that with the intention of kind of reaching out and trying to affect the Black and Hispanic kids in urban areas. So we were trying to get multicultural material into textbooks, and this government action, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, they were trying to get this material into the books. And so about the time in 1970, West Virginia at the state level adopted a policy, made a policy that they wanted to have materials in all of their textbooks, whether it was language arts, history, et cetera, that would reflect the multicultural, pluralistic society. And so right here in 1974 was when these books kind of showed up in Kanawha County, West Virginia.
So we have West Virginia, which was a border state, but obviously had all sorts of Southern sensibilities. The state itself, the state government is saying, yes, we want to reflect these new ideas about multiculturalism, but local people were horrified? Or some local people were horrified? Is that what
some happened? is the operative word.
Well, what are we talking about, a 50-50 split or a small group?
Well, that's an interesting question because –
I mean, for example, right now, Tea Party is getting an incredible amount of attention. It is a small percentage of the American population, but because people are protesting and they're protesting about things that are controversial, it's getting a lot of attention.
Well, let me just say this. I came from the part of town that was the more rich, affluent part of town, more educated.
I'm not surprised.
And we were known as the Hillers because we lived on the hill, and the people – and this is generally speaking, who would have been in the working coal mine communities were known as the Creekers. The people who were on the creek were from the more fundamentalist religious. They had strong fundamentalist was part of fundamentalism. Christianity was a big part of their lives. We on the hill, coming to your question, would have thought this is just a bunch of minority of ignorant hillbilly Bible bangers who are just getting upset about some textbooks. And that's pretty much to the beginning when I started this documentary. If I were to talk to people on the Hill, that's the view they held.
To this day.
To this day. But what I found in my research that the Democratic local paper, the Charleston Gazette, did a survey at the time of the textbook controversy, and they found pretty much overwhelmingly that the majority of the people in the county were not in favor of the textbooks. Which I think is an interesting distinction.
And it was simply because of it had multicultural content, or were there specific things that were upsetting people? For example, Alice Moore, who was a member of the school board, was concerned about the teaching of dialectology. I don't know what dialectology is.
Well, dialectology, from what I understood, was basically a new approach of trying to figure out how to get kids to teach their stories and not have them be hung up on their dialect and the way they're speaking, and have some, you know, school marm with a ruler cracking them and saying, you know, no, you don't say dim and dat and doze and stuff like that. I think that a lot of people who seize on this story seem to think that this may very well be like a kind of a precursor to what we knew in the 1990s as Ebonics. And that we wanted to kind of not they didn't teach Ebonics in 90s, but they wanted to be sympathetic to it or accepting of it. But the whole idea of dialectology, Alice Moore told me that she was really concerned about the fact that to kind of be more inclusive, whether it was to Blacks, there weren't so many Hispanics in Kanawha County, West Virginia, but to Blacks, that we were going to kind of dumb down these grammar standards, and that bothered her.
There were also concerns about selections by Eldridge Cleaver and Malcolm X, and they are and continue to be controversial figures.
Right. There were the selections of Eldridge Cleaver was probably the one that drew the most fire. There was a selection from Soul on Ice. And I have to confess that as I've gone and tried to find the textbooks, I have not actually found the exact textbook that the selection was in. But I have on a pretty good authority that it was a pretty benign passage from Soul on Ice. But what happened was here was a Black author. And he had also written in other parts of Soul and Ice about, you know, raping white women, and then going on to raping raping black women and then to go on and rape white women. And I think that there was a lot of misinformation as the controversy unfolded, was that we were going to be teaching this in the schools, that our kids, possibly our first and second graders, as they're just learning how to read, are going to be reading Eldridge Cleaver and about him and his predilection for raping women. And there was that type of misconception that was going on. But on the other hand, as a lot of publishers have told me subsequently, they think that including Eldridge Cleaver in textbooks at that time was a gross error in judgment.
My guest is Trey Kay, who is the producer and host of The Great Textbook War, which is airing on WNYC this Saturday at 2 on AM 820, and then Sunday at 8 p.m. on also on AM 820, and also on 93.9 FM Saturday at 6 a.m. leading into On the Media. The current controversy in Texas has been fought mostly over the history and social studies books, but the fight here centered on language arts curriculum. Do you think that language arts and English were particularly explosive topics at the time? Or can we even see them because, as political?
Well, sure, you could see them as political. I mean, well, some of the things that were coming up in these books that the protesters, Alice Moore in particular, objected to would have been passages that, would have been critical of the Vietnam War. Anything that would have attacked patriotism, anything that would have attacked authority, certainly, and this skips a little bit from your question, but certainly anything that they would have felt that was a direct attack on Christianity, they had a big problem with that.
What was the reaction of the black community?
Well, the black community in Kanawha County in particular was quite small, but I mean, but in Charleston in particular, in Charleston specifically, there was a sizable black community, but it was pretty small in throughout the whole county. Teachers that I interviewed were delighted that they were going to be having writers like Eldridge Cleaver, but James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, Gwendolyn Brooks, that some of the great African American writers who most white students knew nothing about were going to be taught in the schools. They were very excited about that.
Didn't Alice Moore have a strategy to win support from the black community for the anti-textbook side?
Did she have a strategy? I actually don't know of such a strategy, but I do know that she knew that there were people in the black community who weren't big fans of Eldridge Cleaver and Malcolm X and George Jackson, another Black Panther. And that she claims that she was even getting phone calls from some of these people saying, people in the black community saying, I'm conflicted about this. I mean, we want to have Langston Hughes and Gwendolyn Brooks in our books, but we don't like Eldridge Cleaver. So she knew that there was as Christians and as somewhat conservative black Americans that she could appeal to them in some ways.
But in the end, this comes down to a question that we've heard many times. Who ultimately has the right to decide what our children should learn? And that has led to fights over whether Huckleberry Finn should be in school libraries or Catcher in the Rye.
Well, Alice Moore would tell you that she would like Huckleberry Finn in the libraries. She would say that. I think that there might have been other people on the protest sides who might have a problem with Huckleberry Finn and the use of the N-word, et cetera.
Your documentary mentions that rural West Virginia's Union Country. Why was that important during the textbook protests?
Well, we're right in the middle of the coal. Coal is West Virginia, is what they say down there quite often. And what happened in the protest was that the mothers who objected to these textbooks, who would have been on the creek, Campbell's Creek, Davis Creek, Witcher Creek, they would have gone out to their coal miner husbands and said, we've got a problem here. And they would show up at the mines and say, you know, would you stand with us?
And the tradition of the picket line.
Exactly. And so picket lines were in front of the mines. Picket lines were in front of the public busing system, grocery warehouses. I mean, they really did shut down the area. And really, it would have just been a bunch of hillbillies complaining about Bibles if the coal mines or the coal miners had not gotten involved.
What was the effect of the controversy on the students? Did they feel like they were being pulled in different directions?
Well, sure. It's interesting that you asked me that. One of the things that really attracted me to this story was the students at the high school that I eventually graduated from. They got very involved, and they were in some ways the first line of resistance against the protesters. They actually staged a walkout when the school board came to take their books away, because there was so much violence erupting that they thought the schools were not going to be able to provide safety for the students. So they came and took the books away, and the students at my high school that I eventually graduated from walked out of school. They went and got all the other schools in the area to kind of to dialogue about this, and they contacted the local clergy, the Episcopal, the rabbis in the area, and they really kind of met. It was like pretty much they inspired the first protest against the pushback against the protesters.
But what finally happened? What textbooks did you wind up with?
Well, that's a great question. What happened was they reviewed the textbooks. The board voted to allow the books to go in the school, but they said we're not going to force any student, teacher, parent to have their students use the books. And what ended up happening was, in the rich part of town where I lived, we used the books, but in the rural outlying areas, they didn't touch the books.
But that's different from what we've been seeing in Texas, where everybody's going to have to read the textbooks that this politicized textbook group is insisting on.
Right, and some argue, although there's some argue that because Texas is a huge purchasing juggernaut, that it may not just be people in Texas, that people in other states are going to have to read that. But yes, I think that some of this may, that they may be forced. Although, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder. I think that the Texas they seem to be forcing something, and yet I wonder if, you know, would everybody be fine to read something about Phyllis Schlafly? I mean, is that okay?
I think there's going to be resistance in certain parts of the country. But it's interesting that the textbook opponents held a reunion last summer.
I went to it.
What were they talking about? Did they feel that they'd won the battle?
You know,
you have to tell me very quickly because we're kind of out of time.
Okay, they do feel like they won the battle, but I have to tell you, there weren't many of people who showed up. It was probably like 75 people, and that's a very generous estimate. There weren't that many people there.
There's a link to the documentary on our show page. You can listen to it online or check out the Times, which I listed earlier. My great thanks to Trey Kay for being with us today, and congratulations on winning the Peabody. The show is called The Great Textbook War.
Thank you, Leonard.